Fred Film Radio, International Film Festival, Rotterdam, Netherlands.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2020 International Film Festival, Rotterdam. And I'm very pleased to be joined by Diyar Gesso, who is the producer of The End Will Be Spectacular, but also the co-founder of the Rojava Film Commune, which is credited as the commune that directed the movie. There's a lot to talk about in this film, but first of all, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for being interested and for doing this interview.
And just for the benefit of our listeners who have not heard or are not familiar with this film, would you perhaps mind telling them a little bit about the story or just anything that you would like to say to introduce it to them?
Well, the story of the film is rather a real story, a real recent story that happened in the winter of 2015-16 inside north part of Kurdistan, which is inside Turkey. And it's basically the real story of the resistance of 100 days of young men and women, Kurdish people, defending their lives, their homeland, and their neighborhoods against the siege of the Turkish police forces and army. And it's still from the perspective of the people inside, how they managed to resist 100 days against like a big army, and what was it for them. And also it is enacted by real people, like the real Kurdish fighters from Rojava, and also some of the real survivors of the real event.
So basically the story is actually drawing on lived experiences by the people who not only made the film but are also acting in the film?
Yes, exactly. It is a fiction film, but I believe we have a lot of documentary elements within it. Like this, as I said, the story is real. All the people who acted in the film have maybe not from the real story, but have a lot of similar stories of their own, because they are, as I said, they are real fighters. Some of them who came from the front lines in the city of Raqqa, for example, which was the capital of ISIS, to join the film to act in it. And also the main plot of the film is based on the diaries of the people who died, who lost their lives during the resistance.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the Rojava Film Commune. Just where the idea emerged and how it started. I mean, would you mind maybe telling me a brief history of this commune?
Yeah, well, it's somehow difficult to make it brief, but I will try my best. So we, the Rojava Film Commune, started in 2015 after we emerged from the Rojava Revolution, which happened in 2012 after the war in Syria, the civil war. And we, as a collective of filmmakers from Rojava, which means Kurd Syrian filmmakers and also some friends from outside, want to produce our own films, which is to tell the stories that we have, that we live through our perspective, and to change the narrative that is there from mainstream media, also from other filmmakers that try to tell our story for ourselves, but don't even come to the region to see, don't even do researches, and so on. And also we do screenings in the region, because we don't have any actually functioning cinema theater in the region, so we try to rebuild that. We also have an education system, which we have an art academy. We make some workshops, and also some one-year education for young, for new generation of filmmakers that want to tell their own stories. And also we organize an international film festival, which this year we had the fourth edition of it, but we couldn't because of the last invasion of Turkey to Syria, to northern part of Syria.
So it's more than just filmmaking, it's also just film culture at large.
Exactly, and because for years we as Kurds, we were attacked, a lot of people were killed. Even our language was banned inside Syria, inside Turkey for a lot of years. So all the cinema were closed, so there's no cinema culture actually in our region, and that's something we try to build, because if we can make films, but how we're going to screen them for the people who will come to watch them. So it's something we have to, like, it's very interlocked for us, and we try to do all at the same time. Otherwise, I think it won't have meaning.
Is it also a way to, like, tell these stories to perhaps more than just beyond the Kurd audience to the rest of the world? I mean, now you're in Rotterdam, so these films, you're also aiming for them to reach a wider audience, right?
Yes, exactly. Maybe it's not one of the things that we thought about first when we started the commune, because it's most locally, but then, as I said, saying all of this kind of film, maybe you or the listeners watch some of them, like this Les Filles du Soleil, The Girl of the Sun, and The Sister of Arms, which are maybe good films, and it's good to, like, to see our what we live through being subject of an internationally acclaimed film, but they are all telling story from an outside perspective. And they don't even show us fighting, but not what we fight for or what we're defending. Actually, how do we live? Not saying even the names of the people of the organization fighting there. So I think it's important to be able to tell these stories to international audiences and to raise awareness from a local and from inner perspective.
That's true. It's also like a way to, like, spread information about this, because from this side of the world, we don't know much about what's happening there. So cinema, it does have that power to communicate.
Yes, exactly. It does have this power, and also the very story of our film, The End Will Be Spectacular. As I said, it's which is a real story, happened in 2015-16, but very few reports were there in the international media. Nobody heard of it. Like, it's big city, all of it destroyed. It's a historical city, with like on the list of UNESCO and all. But for example, now in Rojava in Syria, whenever there is some aircraft of the coalition bombing one small village with ISIS fighters, terrorists, which is important too, but it's suddenly the main news in all the international media. Yeah. But it's a whole city destroyed, a lot of people killed. Where do these people go? Where are they now? How they live with all the city being distracted, as you saw in the film? Yeah. But nobody seems to care. So it's also, as you say, it's important to tell these stories to larger international audience.
When you make a film like this, The End Will Be Spectacular, that to me feels like a very, you know, a relatively large-scale movie, especially because it does have some scenes that look difficult to film, you know, some action sequences too. Is it also technically difficult to film them, and are you running into some trouble even with permits or anything like that?
Well, in one way, it's even difficult to get some of techniques into the region, Rojava, because it's all surrounded under, there's this international embargo and so on, all the borders are closed. So we smuggled even the cameras that we shot into the region. So it's kind, but also we have, maybe it's sad too, but like all the big scale sets and decorations, they were real. Yeah. Because the place we shot in Kobani also was attacked early in 2014 by ISIS. So it's these attacks and these catastrophes, as I said, it's sad, but it's also made us an opportunity to make some sceneries that wouldn't be even possible through CGI and so on. So in one hand, it's difficult, very limited resources, but also we can use of what this all of the because also you saw the tanks and so on in the film, but there are also the tanks that left behind from ISIS. Uh-huh. We just painted them and try and made them look like the one from Turkey. But you know, ISIS like captured a big city like Mosul in one day, and like almost half of the territory of Syria, and they captured a lot of armored vehicles, tanks from Syrian army, from Iraqi army, and the Turkish, because they were supporting them, gave them also some equipment. And when the resistance of Kobani won and they fled, they left some of these tanks and vehicles, and we just cast them and painted them and used them.
Yeah, in a way you're using what you've got, right? And it just so happens to be tanks as well as other things. Hey, I've actually gone past the 10-minute mark of this interview, so we really don't have much time left, but I wanted to ask you one more thing. I mean, the work that you're doing, that you've tried to, and I thank you for it, sort of talk with us about the commune and what it does, and also the films that are made, I suppose The End Will Be Spectacular is going to have some attention over here. But is there any opposition that these films and the work that you do has met with, like vocal opposition to this type of work that you guys are doing?
Well, of course, like the, you know, how the world we live in today is, and how all of it is run by, unfortunately, some interests of international power and powers from the region, from the Middle East, like Turkey. So, of course, we submitted a film for some other festivals too before, and we were in touch, and they were so enthusiastic about it. But in the last minute, they would say, "Oh, sorry, no, we can't take this film," and they wouldn't even know. But we understand that it's because of the stories that it tells, and because of the. Some, for example, we can't show the film inside Turkey. Even that our Twitter account is banned, the trailer is banned, and so on. And wow. You know, like now thousands of journalists are in jail and politicians and artists and academics and so on. So we have someone that's not okay with us telling the story, but we'll keep doing it, of course.
Yeah, and you're right to do that, and thanks for bringing that up, you know, of the artists who are imprisoned for making art. Unbelievable. But thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking with you. It was really amazing, and thanks for the film. The End Will Be Spectacular. I hope the listeners will check it out. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank for all the listeners to take the time and listen to us. Thank you.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.